2 o'clock, and if no objections, I'll call the meeting to order. The first thing I'd like to do is, first of all, welcome Mr. Martin Chitty, and he will now be on our Board of Health, and so, welcome.
Thank you.
Okay. All right. So, this is a call to order. First, we have the consent agenda that consists of approval of the agenda and approval of the minutes.
So moved.
Okay.
Second.
Right. Any other questions or anything else that you wish to bring up about the agenda or the minutes? Okay. So, so without any objections, they are passed. Okay. Now, a public forum. This is a time for members of the public to offer comments concerning matters not scheduled to be heard before the Board of Health today. Is there anyone who would like to say anything? Okay, so move on. Agency and departmental reports. First, Denise Stedman, YSS.
Good
afternoon, Denise.
Good afternoon. Hey, you don't have a very good report today. I just want to make this quick. Just a couple things since we saw you in August, but school has started since then, so we are back in the thick of things and doing a lot of in-school programming. We've just finished up first round of Project Alert in a couple schools. That is the program that is 11 sessions, technically 13, that we do at, they're called first and second year, but it's either sixth and seventh grade or seventh and eighth grade. We like that program because it is 11 sessions, and you know, one of the things that we find is that just going in and talking to kids one time, not very efficient. You want a real educational program that gives a message and reinforces it and gives them a chance to think about it and discuss it and try it out. And it's a real skills building program in that it works a lot on their refusal skills, helping them learn how to say no, and not just once, but they practice it a lot. And then actually, this week, I'm going into the Ames Middle School. They've just finished up what they call their booster session. So in the second year, they have about 4 sessions where they revisit all of that. And then I go back in with the Ames Mayor's Youth Committee, one of the youth leadership groups that we work with, and we also do a program on substance abuse and peer pressure, and I take in high school kids and a couple of my health promotion students, and they talk about the kinds of situations where they've been in under peer pressure and how they dealt with it and try and reinforce those Project Alert skills. So we have a booster session for our booster sessions. So we're in the thick of that. We're working, we have a lot of kids who are getting mentoring services as well. What I have in front of you are just a couple documents that I wanted to bring to light. One, what is yet more news about e-cigarettes, and that has been passed, and I haven't had a chance to see Mr. Chitty since it did pass. I sent my students over to do all the heavy lifting on that, but we certainly appreciated your efforts with that. And again, how good this board is and the Board of Supervisors to the students. It's such an opportunity for them to learn firsthand, so I appreciate that. But thought you would like to see more information that just reinforces our belief that this is probably not the best thing. There's been some more research that came out concerning the flavors. You know, all along that was sort of touted as that's harmless because it's not nicotine. But the chemical in that and the acetyl, particularly in the strawberry flavor, seems to be particularly dangerous and leads to respiratory issues. So there's that. The other thing is I wanted to mention some trends. In prevention, we're always trying to stay ahead of things, that prevention. And so you're always constantly looking at trends. And we look at a couple different surveys on a regular basis, sort of as our Bibles to show us which way we're headed. And one of those is the IOU survey. The IOU survey is done every other year. It's done with 6th, 8th, and 11th grade students. And it is done, it's getting done right now, actually, it's usually in October of the Eden years, and then it's released in the next year. So we got results last year. We're doing the survey again this fall. We'll get, usually the county numbers come out first and then individual schools. The county and the state numbers are public. The school, individual school numbers go back to the individual school, and that is their information to share. So we never come to any group and say, this is what Nevada looks like, because that is not our information to share, but any of the county and the state. So this is from the Iowa Department of Public Health, and it looks at sort of the total of adult and adolescent numbers going into a treatment setting for a given drug. Now, the good news is overall, at least for young people, all drug use is going down with a couple notable exceptions. Pot seems to be going back up, and that is a concern. But overall, most use has gone down, particularly with alcohol. That's sort of the good news. The bad news is we still have a number of kids who are using. What these charts do not reflect, and it looks like meth went down and it's come back up a little bit again. Heroin, the opiates are certainly a concern. And the last time I was here, I shared with you a letter that we're sending out to all the businesses encouraging them to encourage their employees to dispose of their medications. And we've created a new document, actually, since we did that, not a new letter that you looked at, but a new document that lists all of the drug drop-off locations, because we now have two in Story County. So we dusted those up a little bit, and those are going out actually next week. So the exception here is that what this does not reflect is that overall alcohol is about half of what everybody goes to treatment for, and marijuana is about a quarter, but the exception to that is the young people. And for adolescents, about 66% of young people who go to treatment, that is for marijuana. They indicate that is their drug of choice.
Now, is that only marijuana, or do they usually do other things? Because that's what I hear when people talk about the safety of marijuana, that it's rarely the only drug that they use. If you only use marijuana, it's okay. That's what I hear.
That's a good rumor.
Yeah, I know. So these 25.8%, is that their drug of choice or the only drug they use?
Their drug of choice. That's the primary reason that they indicate that they are going to treatment. Yeah, that doesn't mean that they're not using other things. And in fact, most people are polydrug users. Most, I shouldn't say that. But it would not be unheard of for them to have a familiarity with other substances. How about that? So that's concerning. This is the whole pot, but when you tease it out for adolescents versus adults, usually it still is about half as alcohol and a quarter, but the young people, the marijuana has gone up considerably, and that was really just in about a four-year period of time. It went from about 47% to 66%. So don't quote me on that 47, but it's pretty close to that. The other trend that I think is interesting is I sit in a lot of meetings. I do a lot of my work now at the university. They're roughly a third of the population in Story County. And I work with a lot of fraternities and sororities and my own students and with the ISU police. And one of the things that I'm hearing consistently in all of those meetings is the number of mental health calls that are going up. So, you know, I often come and just talk about substances per se. But I think mental health issues are also something that need to at least be highlighted and recognized. We've already had one suicide at Iowa State. That was just the first week that we were there. So, and I've mentioned the debriefing team before. There have been a number of debriefings this last couple years just for suicides, not just with Iowa State students, but Story County, other Story County residents. And so I just think that needs an honorable mention in terms of the number of welfare calls that the ISU police and the Ames police are getting to just check on Iowa State students if people have a concern. And just since school started, I've had an issue with one of my own students just needing time because they're afraid that they're going to harm themselves, and that's very alarming. That is, it's way too young to be that stressed. So I just think there is a lot of stress and distress that is taking a lot of energy from law enforcement and from mental health professionals in Story County. So,
is Iowa State increasing their resources for those students?
Okay, so the good news is about a year-ish ago, Iowa State did a revamp of their health services. They had a less than favorable sort of review. And as a result of that, they basically got rid of everything. But they got rid of the prevention services as well, and they had a major overhaul of their mental health as well. Anyway, they have hired back Mark Robarth, who is the new wellness. They're not calling it just substance abuse prevention, but wellness coordinator at the university. And they have also hired back Ryan Vanderhaten, who's been before this group before. He was their prevention manager before, and he went to work for American Lung down in Des Moines, but he is going to be coming back as their prevention extension manager, and so they are already ramping up the kinds of services that they're going to be doing, and I think they're going to do a great big push for sort of peer, they had a big peer mentoring program at the university in the past, and they want to revitalize that. They've also hired, to my understanding, about 25 new counselors at the university.
That's very good to hear.
And they have walk-in services now that I don't think really existed well in the past, where they guarantee that you see somebody if you walk in certain hours of the day, sort of 8 to 4, I think at least 4 days a week. So that's reassuring for people like me who, you know, I said to my student who contacted me, this is what I need for you to do. I need you to contact those people, and then I'm going to call you later, and we're going to make sure that that happened. And but to just have some backup like that is very reassuring. That's been a very valuable resource for multiple students that I worked with this last year. So that's encouraging.
Yeah. Okay, thank you very much. Any questions at all for Denise?
No.
Okay, great. All right, let's move on. Thank you very much. Okay, Megan Thompson.
Quick updates for MICA Health Services. Our first one is our First Five program. We have our new data from last year. So,
Megan, it's always a really nice thing when you first start speaking is just introduce yourself again.
Sure.
Because that's mostly for the minutes. Okay?
Megan Thompson, the First Five coordinator at MICA. So, 10 participating clinics we have in Story County. And this last fiscal year we have 78 referrals. So, a good number of our referrals. We serve five counties at MICA and average about 200 referrals in First Five alone. So it's nice to see a lot of them coming from Story County. We have some good partners. Trends and some things we've noticed in this last year. The majority of our referrals are for speech and development. Obviously, that's what we're promoting is healthy mental development in kids 0 to 5. But we're noticing more referrals for autism. And so this is a statewide thing, too. We're thinking providers are increasing the use of ASQs and CHAT screenings, so identifying kids earlier on, which causing an increase of referral. But also we've had an equal number of referrals for kids already diagnosed, so providers are seeing what First Five can do and the connections made for families, so making those referrals for that, too. So. We'll be looking more into that, I think, in the next coming months, just statewide First Five programs, and look at that a little bit closer. Other updates. Carly couldn't be here. iSmile is our dental program. She's kind of shifting her focus this year, going to be doing some outreach to pregnant women and providing prenatal education on the importance of oral health and improving those birth outcomes, and then also working with those pregnant women to start the education on childhood dental care and what to look for, getting them to the dentist by age one and that sort of thing. Those are the only two updates that were given to me to share today, so our other programs are just moving along.
I have a question for you. Do you work with ChildServe at all on this speech development stuff with them?
Yeah, well, we work with ChildServe pretty closely in Story County to refer. We refer a lot of the kiddos there for other services.
Good, thank you.
Mm-hmm. Great. Thank you very much. Okay, any questions at all for Megan? Okay, all right, we'll move on. I just also want to say before you step down, I really am a big fan of First Five. And so it's really helpful for me as a general provider to have somebody that I can turn to get my kids into places that they need to be. Okay, so now, Story County Environmental Health.
Good afternoon, Margaret James with the Environmental Health Department, Story County. Let's see if I can get this on. I'm going to start off by reminding people that Story County offers early voting, and it's really easy. You can just walk across the hall and vote if you're interested. It's a really easy way to vote. So, just an FYI. And then the other thing I wanted to mention was that we get calls from MICA sometimes to do water testing if the kids are on well water. So we really appreciate you calling us and using our services. Very nice when departments work together. So
you're the people we can call if parents have that question of us.
Absolutely.
Excellent.
And also lead. When you do the lead testing too?
No, we dropped that program.
Drop that. In. Yeah. Oh, that's right. Who's doing that now for?
The state is, IDPH.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
But you do fluoride and everything else.
Well, yes, we can. Fluoride generally is not covered by the grant program. The only things that are covered are the bacteria, nitrate, and arsenic. You know, if it seems like a situation where we really need to know that information and the money's out there, we'll cover it. We'll find money to cover it.
There is a piece of information that we had about 20 years ago with all the fluoride levels in all the town waters around. Is that data still available and updated? Because I know that some towns have gone back and talked about their fluoride treatments.
Yeah, I could look into the Dental Association and see what's up there now. I know on the wells, we haven't done a lot, so there's not a whole lot of data, but they're all over the map. Some are too low, some are too high,
right.
And some are right in the window.
See, because that would be, that's nice when, because parents do ask us mm-hmm. that a fair amount about
yeah.
how much fluoride is in the water, and they're from a little town, and, you know, and some people buy the water from Maine, some people have their own well, some people add, some people don't understand.
Yeah. Well, I guess what I don't understand is how does that fluoride toothpaste enter into the equation, because maybe you're getting too much if you're, you know, if your water is high and you get some.
You can get that.
See, yeah, again, I'm not thinking of individual wells, I'm thinking of town.
Well, I see.
Yes. I know
yeah,
these people
from
us.
The
public
water
supply is one way to report it.
Yeah. Okay. Good to know.
Your Ames report would show it. So. Yeah. Okay, so October 11th, 2016. I just got back from vacation today, so it's been a busy day. Start up with septics. So for calendar year 2016, we're not showing the numbers that we did in the previous 2 years, but still a good amount. 65 new permits received, 77 inspections, and one, well, actually three repair permits. This table isn't quite right. For wells, fiscal year 2017, so as of July 1st, we've done 6 well permits, 2 of which were water, 9 pluggings, 2 rehabs, 47 samples, and 15 time of transfer inspections. And then in addition, we did 1 dewatering permit for the city of Ames. For our grants to counties, we're ahead of schedule in our spending. Our grant total is around $26,000, and we've already spent around $12,000, which is good because this is the first year that they're going to consider redistributing the money if counties are having trouble spending it, so we might get a little more money that the other counties cannot use. Pools, tattoo, tanning, 44 pool facilities. We had 1 NOB and 1 citation issued, both by NAT. Of our 7 tattoo facilities, we really had no activity. 19 tanning facilities, and then we had 1 written exam administered. The manager of those facilities have to come in and sit in our office and take an open book test. Another thing that came up with the pools is IDPH wanted to know why City of Ames was not reporting all incidents, because I guess there's a little bit of a disconnect between the Ames swimming the team and things happening while the kids are practicing in the Ames pools, and those incidents that happen are not being reported by the City of Ames back to IDPH. So they're going to be working on that. There's been a little changeover in management there, so hopefully they will get all of those reports in. But anything, you know, get fallen, cut a lip, or bump head, something like that, that has to be reported to IDPH. As far as enforcement goes, we have one overdue time of transfer binding agreement. That's just a demolition thing. We'd like to get them done. We give them about a year to demolish a house if they're not going to be using it in the future. We have 6 outstanding notice of violations, Crestview RVs, of course, Lincoln Theaters, Septic, or a couple of them. Then we've had complaints, nuisance building in Nevada owned by the Catholic Church was really the main one. Then we also just recently got a complaint on manure smells, but this is the time of year where you can expect that. And I think that they just have to be a little patient because those odors will go away. It is a farming community.
So what's the nuisance building? Is it building the farm now?
Yeah. Well, yes, it's got big holes in the roof, so raccoons are starting to live in there, that kind of thing. They cut the grass in that, but it's owned by the church, and I talked to the priest there, and he said that they don't have the money to do that. So I gave them a deadline to either repair the roof or knock it down. They've owned it for a long time, and the neighbors are tired of it.
Where is this?
By the Catholic Church on the south side of the Catholic Church. The backyard butts up against their parking lot.
Okay.
In Nevada. Yeah.
And you deserve a notice of evasion to raccoons.
We've got some openings. No. Okay, so trainings and meetings. I've had some Iowa board meetings. EOC, the three of us went to training for that. County safety, we all had to go to, and then Kathy and I went to floodplain training. Kathy and I have been working on the Coop Cog plan, and Matt works on he takes several webinars for computer. Oh, and then I've been doing Advantex webinars and HR training regarding evaluations. And then miscellaneous things going on. Our Dakota Access Pipeline, we have had zero issues as far as the health department goes. Crestview Mobile Home Park, Dr. Passion asked how many hours, and boy, the department-wide, we want to say 30 to 40. A lot of us really long phone calls, things like that. So Matt and I, about 30 to 40 hours in the past since January 1. It's tough to wrap. Yeah.
It's like a week of work.
Let me get that back.
Okay, thank you.
Yeah. Let's see. I've done a site review for Bed and Breakfast north of town here. They're expanding quite a bit. Hardin County, we're having the new sanitarian come down and shadow us, and the three of us have been working on training her, and they're very appreciative of that. The county strategic plan update for water quality, I worked with Leanne Harder and submitted that. Stephanie and Kathy and I participated in the United Way Day of Caring. Good opportunity to volunteer. I did a review of the Iron Bridge subdivision. You meet with the contractors that are coming in and give them my 2 cents worth on the soils and that there. And then the Irons is starting earth moving. The Irons is the one at the Ames Golf and Country Club. And they haven't moved the mound yet, but they will. And that's the one that's serving the country club. Thank you.
Okay. Good. All right. Any questions at all from Margaret?
None. Thank you for what you guys
are
doing in your department.
All right. Okay. Thank you very much. And we'll hear from you again. Okay. Now, we have Story County Public Health.
Kyle Breeze, Story County Public Health. I see if you bring 2 items, you get relegated to the back of the line, so I'll remember that for next time. I gave you a couple sheets in front of you there. Again, the first, the colorful one, is really just to try to give a broad overview of what we're doing. The top boxes with numbers and lines, that really just signifies some of the major things that public health is doing. Those numbers are yearly numbers, and so really for that last dot on your graph, you're just seeing the last 2 months annualized, so you can see kind of what pace we're at. Disease encounters continue to be high. Mumps reports, and also we had kind of a rash of E. coli reports as well over these first 2 months of the fiscal year. The health aid hours are increasing, which again, that's purposeful, and that's a purposeful service we're trying to better deploy into our community as a means of reaching out to people and getting access to get them the next level of health service they might need. We can delve into that at a later point, but then we go down the page there, really how well we did. This isn't just public health nurses. This is our whole group there, but we get rated regularly for our level of care. And again, just our organization, we maintain a very high, over 90% of our patients give us a 9 or 10 as far as rating our care. The last one there just talks about our funds expended year to date. And the black line really just represents what's expected. Just based on 2 months of spending, and the orange is where we're at actually. And really I just bring that up to say those nursing aid services, that first box on the left, we really desire that to be at that expected level. And the less that we can't, our inability to get it there means that we have to find out other ways and deploy our resources in other ways to utilize our public health funding. We talked last time about making sure we're deploying our resources as much as possible to direct patient care, and as opposed to some of these other services which might look like collaboration or partnership, which is still a part of what we're doing, but we want to make sure that we're putting as much funding into the direct patient care as we can. So that will continue to be a focus. The sheets behind it, the data, that's a typical report we've been feeding you for a while, so hopefully just kind of give a little bit more detail of what the group's been doing. And then as we step into influenza season, I just gave you the first page of the IDPH's influenza illness surveillance report that currently comes out monthly, but starting mid-October will be a weekly report that, again, is a tool we use to help understand on a state level at least where what influenza activity is looking like. We know locally already we've had a number of cases in the hospital, a number of inpatients, so we have seen influenza already at Mary Greeley. But just to kind of a piece to keep you aware, this is just one of the many pieces of information we're utilizing in what we're doing.
Those elderly?
The ones I'm aware of were immunocompromised, so not necessarily elderly, but more vulnerable. And then probably just to touch on a couple of those newer collaborations we've been working on. One, we are looking to work with Primary Healthcare, who is a federally qualified health center in West Ames there by the West High B, looking to provide some public health clinics in collaboration with them. And that hopefully should be starting soon here. And then also the community, a group cross-section of service agencies, health agencies in the community are partnering to work with Robert Wood Johnson Foundation on a year-long coaching project that will be focused on assessing the health infrastructure, community infrastructure, and seeing what, as a group, we can collaboratively do to reinforce that structure. Questions? Yes, sir.
Communicable diseases such as TB that student health picks up, do we follow up on those, or are we notified of those?
We are notified, and actually we have 10. Tara gave me a note here. She couldn't be here today. She's out of town, but we have 10 that we're currently working with that are, I believe, all based in the university.
I believe last time we had some measles cases. Are those still...
No reported measles cases.
Mumps. That's right. Mumps.
Oh, yes, mumps, yep. That continues to be an issue. Continues to what drives those numbers in that first box on the left on that first page. Again, we're over 10 during these first 2 months that were reported. And again, this is even before school is really fully in session. So we've seen continued activity there. Yep.
I'm intrigued by the fact that you said that you've been running down some E. coli cases.
Yes.
And this is from school studies that are done by the new PCR method?
I believe, yeah.
Yeah, okay. It's always interesting to me because we have a phenomenally sensitive test now. And if we run it a lot, we're going to find it a lot. As opposed to the culture in the past, we are not nearly as sensitive. And I always kind of wonder, is it real or is it not?
Sure.
And stuff. So that's kind of something we're dealing with. And,
okay.
You know,
I'll definitely bring that back to Terry and see if we can, what her follow-up has yielded in doing those and see.
Yeah, it's rare that I run a school study and not find something. And in the past, we wouldn't. Because remember, it only takes one bacteria on that PCR, to be positive. It's always an interesting test.
Mm-hmm. Do you think more physicians are running the tests now, too, since you get the results
really
much more quickly?
It's really an expensive test, so we're trying not to, but they've kind of taken away the culture from us. Mm-hmm. They're not even doing it anymore. And so we have a phenomenally sensitive test, and then we have to put the symptoms with the patient, and of course, just the test results. And we are kind of struggling with that a little bit.
Thank you.
Okay, anything else?
Not on this, unless we just want to move to the next item.
Okay, all right, very good. All right, so next item. You are going to talk about the coordination of public health emergency preparedness funding.
Yep, so this is for the current fiscal year. I don't know if you had a chance to read the included memo. And so really what we're requesting, and this will include a request at the IDPH level as well, is to just move the dollars into a different bucket. Not more money, not less money, just moving into it a different bucket from the budget. The purpose of this, long story longer, is that we're coming up on the end of the five-year project for emergency preparedness. And as we have done our assessments and have faithfully tried to carry out all the various the lists of performance measures, lists of criteria to check off to make sure that we're in compliance with the funding, there's a sense of just consternation about whether we've met it at the level that the state would expect. And so in doing this, in moving this funding, it would be for the purpose of working with a third party who would help assess our plans and give us assurance that what we have set out to do is aligned with those performance expectations.
Okay. Very good. Questions? Okay. Very good. Great. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Okay.
Do we need to move to allow them to move this?
Oh, do we have to? Is there a movement? No.
It's not on your action agenda.
Yeah, this isn't. You don't need action from us, do you?
I don't think this is good. This would be through IDPH.
Right. Okay.
So,
that's a good question.
Definitely, our goal was to keep the board aware as we went for this request, and to make sure that if you had any concerns before we requested this of IDPH, as again the board, Dr. Paxton, is a signer on the agreement that was made aware. But as far as I understand, I don't think you need to approve that.
Okay.
I'm looking to
only if an amendment would be required. So not.
Okay. Once the okay. Okay. Thank you.
Okay,
thanks.
Thank you. Okay. Now, discussion of mosquito control. We're kind of late in the season, isn't it?
It's the best time of year.
We need to put you on in April.
We needed it for us.
That's right, we needed it for us.
Afternoon, Josh.
How you doing, sir? Good. Good to see you.
Good to see you, too.
I was looking through my notes. I'll do the formal introduction, sir,
in a second.
But I was looking through my notes, and I had a number that was wrong. So if you don't mind, you guys can talk amongst yourself, and I'll change my numbers. I want to give accurate information here, so we're good. All right. Well, good afternoon. I'm Joshua Thompson with the City of Maine Parks and Recreation. I'm a Parks and Facilities Superintendent. Margaret, I talked to Margaret probably about a little over a month ago, and she invited me to come to speak with you folks about the City of Maine's Mosquito Control Program. Any questions before we get started? Just an overview of what we're going to discuss this afternoon in this presentation, talking about the history, Iowa State's involvement with the program, a process, the three-step approach, and the budget. As far as history, the control program has been instituted for over 40 years within the city of Ames. Through that entire time, Iowa State University Entomology Department has been involved. And the biggest focus, our main goal is disease prevention. if by chance a disease outbreak takes place, we already have the program in place. We don't have to start something new. And we can help control it that way. And then also, we do receive citizen concerns over the summer, periodically over the years, and we answer those as best as we can. As far as Iowa State's involvement, Dr. Ryan Smith, he oversees the mosquito surveillance program. He just came on in 2015. This lab at the university has done mosquito surveillance since, like, I believe the late 60s. And what Iowa State does is they own the traps. There's two types of traps that are used, and I'll go over those in a little bit. They also analyze the samples that we send to them. They recommend control procedures. They also send samples to the state hygienic lab. They assist in determining locations of where we need to fog, if we need to focus in certain areas, and also if there's certain areas where we need to trap. And then also, they're a great resource for citizen concerns. Basically, they're the experts. We look to them for any information that we need. As far as the process, we have one full-time maintenance specialist on staff that basically oversees the program on a day-to-day basis. During the season, this past season, we hired two seasonal staff, and they're all certified pesticide applicators required by state law. The program basically starts in June, when the traps are set out by Iowa State. Second week of June, usually we send out a press release to the community that describes the process, the fogging schedule, addresses minor citizen concerns, and also tips for citizens on how they can help keep the mosquito population in check. And then the three-step approach, we monitor, we larvicide, and then we adulticide, also known as fogging. So in the monitor stage, we do that citywide. There's multiple sites throughout the city that we check on a yearly basis. Sometimes they're yearly, sometimes they change year to year as well. And every site is checked at least once per week. If you can look at that, see that picture at the top, we have individuals that go out, or an individual goes out and checks little water puddles, little ponds, and sees if there's any larva in there. If they see larva, then we move on to the next step of the process. In the lower right-hand corner, that's a trap, an example of a trap that is used, and they take the samples out, and they take those to Iowa State. The trap on the left is the New Jersey light trap. It's basically used for mosquito counts only. Of course, it not only attracts mosquitoes, but other insects. So all the samples are taken to the university, or the university personnel. They separate every, and they count every mosquito that's in those traps. The one on the right is specifically targets female mosquitoes, which are the major vectors for disease, West Nile virus, yellow fever, those types of things. An attractant is in there, and they have to be alive to check for disease. So that's when we take them to the state hygienic lab, and that's where they're tested then.
So that's what they analyze them for. They analyze, obviously, the species.
Yep.
And also then any type of viruses are associated with it.
Correct. So, I'm sorry, have they ever
found anything besides West Nile virus?
As far as I know, no. I was looking through, I would say if you get on Iowa State's website, you type in Department of Entomology and Mosquito Surveillance, they have a lot of information, and I just found this today. But they've identified 60-some species of mosquitoes. It's unbelievable. And I've learned a lot about mosquito surveillance in the last year, more than I really want to know, but it's good information. But the thing that got me is like that they count every single mosquito, and then they have to separate it out, and then they identify the species that as well. So. Sorry, I apologize for the picture. It's a little small, but those are the sampling sites. Those are where the traps are set up throughout the community. Three of those are in the park system. Two of them are on Iowa State property, and then two of them are actually in the county outside city limits. Those sites were determined by Iowa State. Ever since the program started and ever since we started using it with the city, we had never received a bill from Iowa State to do this program until August of this year. I get an email from Ryan says, hey, we are no longer going to do this program anymore. And I was like, okay. And so we went through the process and we kept the traps in place for this year, but we ended up finding some money so we could continue to support the program through the end of September. And I'll go into the budget later.
Okay, so and you're going to hopefully try to get some more for next year?
Yes, it's already, we talked to our city manager, my director went to the city manager, and we basically feel like it's a very good program that we need to continue, and we'll find ways to make it, make sure we continue to do this in the future. The second step is the larvicide. That's the chemical we use. It's the active ingredient, Bacillus thuringiensis, if I said that correctly. Rates 2.5 pounds to 10 pounds per acre. And if it's really, really dirty water, sometimes it goes up to 20 pounds per acre. The residual lasts usually 7 to 14 days. And if they go out there and they see water in their little, or if they see larvae in their sampling cup, they're throwing that material or that chemical out there. The areas that we're looking for, drainage dishes, catch basins, you know, construction sites, storm drain, low-lying areas that are going to collect water. Then the adulticide is, which is the fogging. This year we switched to a new chemical called Anvil 2.0. Well, it's not a new chemical. It's a chemical that's been on the market for a while, but one of the things that Clark Chemical is a major chemical provider for mosquito control, and they recommend switching chemicals every other year to just prevent prevent resistance between mosquitoes. And the rate of that you can see is 3 ounces per acre, very low. The fog that you see in the air is active for seconds. It does not build up in any organisms. It dissipates very, very quickly. So it's going to kill mosquitoes that are actually in the air. If it's not in the air long enough for it to settle and sit on mosquitoes to kill them. So it's only killing mosquitoes that are active in the air. This is the fogging equipment that we have, or it's an example of the fogging equipment that we use at the City of Ames. It's on a skid that sits in the back of a truck. Our fogging schedule, right now we're only hitting parks and really active areas where people are in the park system. You can see Hunsaker Sports Complex. It's not a park. It's we lease that to the Hunsaker Sports or Youth Sports Complex Committee or a group. But everything else there is parks. Fogging schedule, we're active between 8 and 10:30 in the evenings. If it's too windy, like over 10 miles an hour, we're not applying. If it's raining, of course, we're not applying then. Our makeup days include weekday mornings from 6 to 8 a.m. and then Thursday evenings. Also, if a group has rented a shelter on the weekend, we'll go out there on the weekend and fog and try to treat around those areas, and also other citizen requests in the community. Sometimes we'll get individuals like out in the urban areas, not necessarily around a park, that say, hey, we've got a wide open space that's a lot of mosquitoes, would you mind coming in and fogging? We'll do that for them.
So let's just say I call you up and say I'm going to be having an outdoor luau, and would you fog? Or would you charge me for it? Not that I'm going to ask you to do it.
Drive all the way over to your barn.
The what?
He won't drive all the way to the barn.
Well, that's right. Well, yeah, I have a bag of names next year.
I would have to take that from my director. It's okay. not something that we do all the time. We have done it. If there was a section of town, we would come in, like a small section. I don't know where you live, but if it was in a neighborhood, say it was in a neighborhood, and we potentially do it. The reason why we don't do it through the whole city is because there's obviously concerns from individuals there are some cities that do the whole town. We just haven't got to that point, and I don't know if we ever will.
Okay. Just curious.
Yeah, no, it's no question. So in regards to the budget, the piece of equipment on the right is approximately $10,000. We have that basically similar. It's a one-time purchase. We store it or we use it. It's placed in the back of a F-150 truck that we share with the fire department. It's got lights. It's got mosquito control naming on it so people know what we're doing. That was just an initial cost of $30,000. That was what I got from our fleet department. Of course, you can use any vehicle or any four-wheel drive. Well, you don't have to be four-wheel drive. We use four-wheel drive because just some of the areas are wet. You can put that in any vehicle or any truck. Then operational budget. We have one full-time staff, two seasonal staff. Since July 1, we've spent about $2,200. It's been pretty active. It was a pretty active season. The chemical that we purchased is $3,700. It's 55 gallons. That'll get us through the whole year. And then we purchase 120 pounds of larvicide per year. So the services, as I mentioned earlier, each trap is $125 per month. We have 8 traps within the city. If we go from June to September, it's approximately $5,000. And then the fleet costs, we have an annual fleet cost that maintains the equipment, it's $3,000. So a total budget of about a little over $15,000. So it's kind of a big, high-arching or high view of what we do. But is there any questions? Any concerns?
Good question.
Can you talk a little bit about the trap up on Hanson?
Yeah.
And what
you
found there?
The reason I called Margaret was this summer is that we get reports from Iowa State coming back from the hygienist lab saying that, hey, we have identified mosquitoes, a sample of mosquitoes that were carrying West Nile virus. Not necessarily that anybody was hurt or not anybody was hurt, but anybody was sick. I got a report of last year, an individual up off Aerosmith Trail, which would be northeast Ada Hayden, got sick. They thought it might have been West Nile virus. We don't get that information at the city. They actually went to the Department of Entomology, and they wanted to put a trap up there. I guess I think there's a county drainage tile that drains into a private pond. And I don't know. They put the trap up there, and they did find West Nile virus up there. Another area where they did find West Nile virus was out in West Lincoln Way on that trailer park. So it's out in the county. But I mean, we found it. It's and also we found it in McCarthy Lee Park and then Country Gables Park in the West Southside. So I was talking to Ryan. He said, usually when you have a dry summer or dry June, sometimes West Nile virus becomes more prevalent later in the year. Who knows? So, and since it's in the county, talked to our director, and he went to see the manager, and we did not do anything. We did not apply. We did not larvicide up there just because it was in the county. He was worried about some liability concerns. So.
Okay. Right. Any other questions, Paul?
No.
Okay, thank you for a
very
interesting talk. Thank you.
All right.
And in the future, the county may want to consider a program that
the pastor.
Interesting. Great. Sounds good. Okay. Now we have the Crestview Mobile Home Park update. And before we begin, is there anyone representing Mr. Lemire? Here? Anyone? Okay. And did Mr. Lemire know about the change in this? Was he sent a notice?
I sent it to his attorney, the email, the agenda.
Okay. Thank you very much. All right. Go ahead. Yes, please, because I just wanted to make it clear that we did let him know that this meeting was held today, and he knew the agenda.
Yes.
And so I can't make him come to me. So, okay. Thank you. But we can talk.
Okay. So, Margaret James, Environmental Health. I was asked to just do a quick rundown on the most recent events and the dates of those events that led up to this notice of violation appeal. So,
and just to bring people up to date,
okay.
There have been some trailers, camping trailers, moved on to the Crestview Mobile Home Park. Apparently, they're paying him rent. Some are hooked up to the water system. And we have told him, and this happened since the last meeting, we have told him that he can't do that because the park is still closed. And then he has appealed
And then we finally slew and move him, so we serve them a notice of violation, and he is appealing. So Margaret is going to talk about what kind of led up to all this, and then we're going to talk about the notice of violation.
Okay. Well, you pretty much summarized it. Yes. So I think you did my job nicely there. All the way back in July, it looked like RVs were kind of coming in and out, and they were playing with that idea. And then at 9:13, two RVs were observed hooked to water and sewer service at Crestview. And then one that was owned by Brandt himself had it sitting in the roadway, not necessarily connected. So definitely two were hooked up. And these are new RVs brought in, and most probably pipeline workers. Let's see, 9:19, same status. 9:19, Dr. Passion directed me to notify Crestview that we were going to begin proceedings with the process for citation, okay, with fines included in that. Okay. And then Ethan, he did he took a good hard look at it and thought it would be best to proceed very cautiously. And so we we started off with a notice of violation with a 30-day opportunity to abate. And then if no abatement by the deadline, we would issue a citation with a fine.
And when was that notice of violation put out?
That was sent out on 9/22/16, then with an abatement date of 10/24/16, and then we received the notice of appeal on 9/29/16 from Brandt's attorney.
So what that means is that on September 22nd, you gave him 30 days to get rid of those trailers,
yes.
Otherwise face the fines. Am I reading? Is that correct? Okay, thank you. Okay, and do we know, has there been any movement on the issue? Because this is already the 10th, right? 11th.
Well, there's no. As of, what was it, 2 weeks ago? Or, well, when were you last out there, Matt? 1 week ago? 2 weeks ago, the RVs were still there. He's adamant that that is his right to have those RVs in there.
Just to kind of give a little bit more insight into it, and this is, since Mr. Lemire is not here, his sense is that he interpreted what was said at the last Board of Health meeting, that he could keep his units up to 14. And one of the things he asked me to do was, well, he wanted, I didn't have the minutes at that time, so I actually listened through the whole meeting, and there was no mention of anything about allowing him to increase up to 14. There was a lot of discussion about he couldn't move the mobile parks out unless the taxes were paid for,
right.
And they were allowing them to stay in there, and he could move them within the park, but there was no discussion about saying that he could bring more in to keep up to 14. And also, we have to remember that this is not the first time this issue has been visited on him. In July, he had a park, and Matt was there, and he had the sheriff go out and everything, and he knew that he could not add new units at that time. And so, at least that's, you know, I don't see how he can interpret that as an outlay. But he didn't do that, you know, back then. Okay. So now we have notice of violation, and he has until October 24th to move the trailers out.
The RVs out.
The RVs out, thank you. And these are just the new RVs, not the trailers that are there. It's just the new ones.
All new ones.
Okay, and what will be the fine?
$600
per
day.
Per day.
Notice.
Okay, okay. $600 per RV, $600
per day.
Per day.
Per day. Okay, got it.
So we would issue a citation, and then
and then does he get a new abatement deadline or a citation and then to find the case in
the case? He has right under the court ordinances to a trial for a hearing in court on notice of violation. We had to prove up the citation in court. Unless he stick with it.
So, Margaret, has he moved any trailers out? He hasn't moved any trailers yet, right?
He has moved two out of that loop, but, you know, onto other parts of the park. So he is starting to clear out that loop and able to move the ones that are going to stay into that loop.
Now, he hasn't done the water loop yet, is that right?
I thought someone just came in.
Sorry. Yes, he's vacated two out of the loop and then put one of the RVs in that spot, and then other RVs are hooked, or the other RV is hooked from another additional line, so it goes to the trailer, and then there's a little pipe that goes to the RV. The loop has not started yet, no. But he indicated to me that would not take long at all. So he could just do it in a heartbeat. The other thing I wanted to mention was just today I received an email from Janet Gastineau with DNR, and she said they have not yet received their formal form saying that they are going down to a private system for their water supply.
Yeah, that's the other thing.
Well, I don't know if they, you know, where that puts them.
What about his lagoon system? I read something from them too that the lagoon system was failing.
It's not. It probably overtopped with these recent rains. I'm quite sure it did. They've got some issues with how they pipe it, and some of the electrical thing for the pump for the lagoon. So there's some issues with it. I don't think you could call it failing yet. And that would still be under DNR because of the number of people using it.
Right. I remember seeing something from the DNR from her that she sent to us. There were several violations on there.
There were. I think some of the trailers on top of the lagoon, not maintained, going around it.
The weeds and...
And then that pipe that's just... that hose is just clamped on, you know, that could blow out. So there's several issues with it. I wouldn't consider it failing, though. No. But anyway, so whether or not it's considered a public system until they get notification, or if just the fact that they drop down in those numbers.
Now, isn't that, I remember from the emails you have sent me, isn't that notification his responsibility?
Correct.
So,
you know, if he's still under DNR, then this RV thing kind of goes away. But
if he doesn't put in the paperwork, then what? I mean, that's like me saying, you know, yeah, I broke the law, but I decided, you know, I'm not going to be under your jurisdiction, you know? I guess since we have our county attorney here, if I can ask that question, what your opinion is about that?
With the two levels...
And then introduce yourself.
Oh, yeah, sorry. Ethan Anderson, Assistant Story County Attorney. With the two levels of oversight, the state level and then the county level, my understanding is that state has always deferred to county and let us take the lead in this action.
Okay.
And I think they're going to continue with that. Nothing changes the fact that we can continue to enforce county ordinances and under the nuisance violation, regardless of what he does or doesn't do with IDNR. We're still here enforcing the clean water at Crestview, fit for human consumption. Until he can abide by the conditions the Board of Health set for him, it's my understanding that he's still in violation, still subject to the Board of Health orders.
Okay. Thank you very much. That helps us a lot. Okay. Any other questions from the Board of Health, from Margaret, about what we're dealing with and what we... So now we have three options. We can either just say, nope, this notice of violation is not appropriate. We can amend it somehow, or we can let it stand.
That's correct. Mr. Lemur, he's not here, but in his appeal, he's asking that the Board of Health rescind the notice of violation and allow him to keep the RVs on site. So, yeah, the Board of Health, yeah, you're right. You can modify the order addressing the situation, and or you can just affirm the notice of violation and allow the process to play out where you can rescind it.
Okay. So, thoughts, questions? Without any thoughts or questions, any other thoughts to come out, I would like to make a motion that we allow the notice of violation to stand.
Second.
That's good.
Any further discussion? Okay, then I think we should take a roll call vote. Okay, Mark?
Aye.
The motion is that the notice of violation stands and things will continue on as we've outlined.
Yes. Aye.
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 Aye. Okay, let it show that it was a unanimous vote by the Board of Health that we let this notice of violation stand. Okay?
I think one more thing important to note under the county ordinance, that once the notice of violation is appealed, the proceedings are stayed, and so the time is told. And so from the 29th until today, that would be 12 days. So November 4th.
12? I thought you said 10 days. 10 days.
10, 11 days. Whatever, from September 29th until today, it's told. So the proceedings are suspended during that time. So he has additional time to comply, essentially.
It puts the notice of violation on hold, and then it starts up as of today. So however long that window was, gets added on to his deadline. That's English.
And he is still collecting rent at this time.
I assume so. I don't have that information.
Okay.
He needs to add basically 11 days into that.
Followed the notice of appeal on the 29th, and today's the 11th, so we determined it would be November 4th is when he has to.
But I would still give him a deadline on that water loop.
That was
by December 1st, right?
That water loop thing is we will.
That's a separate issue.
That's a complete.
That was December 1st, he was to have that done, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yes.
That's correct. That's a completely separate action.
Right.
He was simply appealing the notice of violation.
Right.
So come December 1st, if he doesn't have it, he might move.
Right.
Okay. All right. Okay. Can I ask how we will let Mr. Lemire and his attorney know of this action? Is there?
We'll provide a service or notice to his attorney.
Thank you very much. Okay. All right. Okay. Anything else? All right, so we have to move on. Discussion of the final 28E agreement between the Board of Health and the Iowa Department of Public Health for pool, tattoo, and tanning inspections. So, what do we have to discuss?
It probably should have been on the consent agenda.
Actually. Yeah, okay.
Yeah.
It sounds like a consent.
It's just one of those check mark deals.
Okay, so you're still going to do it.
Yes.
Okay. All right. Okay. So we probably, since it wasn't on the consent agenda, we probably make a movement, or we have to have a motion to continue to do the pool, tattoo, and tanning inspections.
So moved.
Second.
Okay. Any other discussion? All those in favor, say aye.
Aye. Aye.
All those opposed? Okay. Thank you. And approval of employee action form, longevity, merit increase, pay adjustments, and for Margaret James at $2,904 per pay period.
I would move to approve that.
Okay.
Second.
Okay. Any other discussion? All those in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Okay. Sounds good. And then comments from the staff. Any comments from our staff? Nope. Comments on the board?
I can tell you in my short time on the board, I have appreciated what Margaret James' office does on behalf of the county. they get out there in a way pretty small that don't rise to the level that it becomes public discourse, but it isn't through a lack of effort. They do the best on our behalf. And her husband, I've been watching a series of videos that he has, Dan has, and I just gave her a copy of A Successful Farmer. Dan was a featured participant in an article, and I don't know what you did, but I hope you took it home.
Yeah.
But it's a pleasure to have gotten to know you.
Well, very good. And I echo those sentiments completely. Okay? And I also would like to thank Kristen for having taken care of those emails while I was out of contract. You don't know how much I appreciate that.
You
leave town. That's right. All this stuff happens. That's what I like.
Okay.
Okay.
I move we adjourn.
Okay. Second.
All right. We stand adjourned. Thank you very much. Okay. Now.